Welcome to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, why are there so many crashes in pro cycling at the moment? Vingegaard, Evenepoel and Van Aert have all broken multiple bones in recent weeks. We'll be looking at the possible reasons why and what can be done to reduce the risks. Plus, there appears to be more crashes and harder crashes than ever before.
Cycling shorts with a built-in airbag. I guess you could make bikes deliberately slower.
That is one of your best, mate.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Genuinely, that is absolutely brilliant.
I don't think I'll describe this. I think chunky doesn't even come close.
No, it really doesn't, no.
Is the uploader working? This week in the world of cycling, we learned that there are now more cyclists than motorists in Paris. The visionary mayor Anne Hidalgo has put into action many cycling policies, and this stat is confirmation of the success in a very short period of time.
She's not visionary, Dan. She's revolutionary. See what I did there?
I can see what you did there. The pun basically wrote itself, but well, still wasn't any good.
That's right. And I also learned that the most prestigious one-day race in cycling has had two of the most prestigious winners possible. Both men's and women's world champions took top honours in Paris-Roubaix at the weekend. Lotte Kopecky won the women's from a five-rider group, and Mathieu van der Poel won the men's from a 60-kilometre solo break.
And we learned that solo break was blooming quick, yeah, didn't we? Average speed in the pro peloton continued to get higher and higher. So Van der Poel averaged 47.8 kilometres per hour, just under 30 miles per hour, for the 260 kilometres of Paris-Roubaix.
That is mind-blowing, isn't it? Although actually, when I saw the time for the race, it didn't seem that much. I thought, I could do that.
5 hours 26.
5 hours 20. Yeah, that's
like,
not
like semi-classics from years gone by.
Basically, yeah. Now we should say it's the third consecutive year in which the race has been ridden at a record speed, and it's that sparked our conversation at the coffee machine this morning. Nick, there appears to be more crashes and harder crashes than ever before in pro cycling. Are these increased speeds the reason for it?
And if not, what are the other contributing factors? And are there actually more crashes? And another question I've been asking myself, or is it just that of late, those big and really bad crashes have involved the biggest stars in the sport right now?
Yeah, so if you missed the Tour of the Basque Country last week, you might not know what we're talking about. Basically, a high-speed crash on a descent there took down a large number of riders, including Evenepoel, Roglic and Vingegaard.
At 80 k's per hour, apparently. And now Roglic got away without any broken bones, but there were multiple fractures for the other riders that Si mentioned and a few others. Jay Vine's injuries were particularly nasty. I'm not going to go into all the details here on the GCN show, but if you're interested, I did detail them all in yesterday's Racing News show.
Should we start by looking into whether or not there are more crashes now? Funny enough, this is something we've talked about several times over the course of GCN's history, isn't it? So it's something that's getting worse and worse.
Well, it feels that way. It's hard to decipher, isn't it? But we did do a video along the same lines 9 years ago.
Yeah.
The Tour de France.
Well, that's it. And there still isn't much data out there, is it? And what there is only from the last 5 years or so.
Yeah. We've got this graph that actually the UCI recently showed at a conference they did. And this is using data that they've gathered from Pro Cycling Stats. So as you can see, the line of best fit clearly shows a steady increase in incidents and injuries since they started recording in 2018. But we should point out that these are reported injuries. So there is a decent chance that a higher percentage of crashes and therefore injuries are now being reported than they were a few years ago.
That is true. But the UCI, we've got to say, are taking it seriously, aren't they? They're now working with an organisation called Safer, based out of Ghent University in Belgium, to try and understand the situation. Unsurprisingly, perhaps, they found that a lot of crashes occur in the final 20 kilometres of racing. 42%, to be precise.
Which obviously suggests that the most attention on extra road safety, etc., should be focused on that very final part of races and stages of races.
Yeah, now back to the original point, though. Whilst we don't have a huge amount of data to say that there are definitely more crashes now, it certainly, as we mentioned a moment ago, feels like there are. Question is, why?
Well, at the coffee machine, we immediately came up with a few potential reasons, didn't we? So first up, the aforementioned speed. Now, this is something that we do have data on, because it wasn't just Roubaix that was the fastest in history this year. Already before that, the Tour of Flanders and Milan-San Remo were also the fastest in history this year.
Yeah, we should point out that this is the average speed, obviously, that we're looking at. And races do seem to be opening up far earlier now than they had done for the first part of this century. But there is no doubt as well that riders are going faster than they ever have before.
Yeah. Why are they going faster? Well, there's a combination of reasons, I think, isn't there? The science of training and nutrition has never been as advanced as it is right now. There's access to knowledge that wasn't so freely available in the past. So every rider is now having to go to altitude camps to be competitive. And another consideration is probably the sheer intensity of the racing in this current era.
Yeah, something that multiple riders have said has changed since 2020, actually, the COVID year. From that point on, every race was important, wasn't it? And if you weren't on peak form, you didn't pin a number on, you carried on training until you were.
On top form, yes. The Basque Country is probably quite a good example of that, isn't it? I reckon if you go back 15 or 20 years or so, there's no way that you would find three of the best GC riders in the world from that era, all on close to top form, and all really gunning for the win, wanting to go for it.
Yeah, plus a load of other super talented riders all looking to beat them as well. Because riders used to peak for certain events, didn't they? And then remain calmer on the lead up to them.
A bit like Geraint Thomas of Ineos Grenadiers still does to this day.
Although, to be fair, you have to point out that Geraint Thomas crashed a lot
through his career.
Even when very calm in the lead up to me.
But anyway, what it means is that you've got all of these team leaders, they're all flying and wanting to win the race, all with teammates who want to protect those leaders and keep them in the best position possible at pretty much every moment of every stage. I feel like there was more of a hierarchy in the bunch before as well, or at least fewer riders fighting to be at the front on every descent and before every crucial corner or climb.
Yeah. I mean, it is ironic, isn't it, really? The fight to be in the safest position at the front of the peloton has led to things being more dangerous. Now, I wanted to pick on something that you said just before, actually. In riders training so much more than they have been doing, do you think they're doing less racing now and therefore they've not got as much experience in the peloton?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I did have a quick look before we started recording. So Carlos Sastre, who won the Tour de France in 2008,
the year before he was your teammate.
The year before, yes.
Yeah,
that year, he did a total of 81 days of racing, 35 of which were before the Tour de France even started.
Wow.
Pogacar did a grand total of 49 days of racing in the whole of 2023. And on a different note, nobody has ever won Flanders or Roubaix with fewer days of racing leading up to them than Van der Poel did this year.
Yeah, but you see, you wouldn't ever look at Van der Poel and be like, well, he's dodgy, isn't he? Because he doesn't do much racing.
No, but then he's got a background in cyclocross and mountain biking and everything else, like Tom Pidcock, isn't he?
Yeah, or maybe that was why both he and Pogacar like going solo.
Oh, yes.
They're not very comfortable in the bunch these days.
I mean, 60-kilometre and 80-kilometre solo escapades do reduce the risk of crashing, I would imagine. Got no data to back it up. Anyway, speaking of race days, we all know that there are more and more youngsters in the pro ranks, even teenagers, and they are capable of winning almost straight away, aren't they? But that is definitely a big change. It was unusual to see anyone under the age of about 21, I'd say, turn pro about 10 years ago. But then yesterday, Andrew August of Ineos Grenadiers competed at Paris-Roubaix, the pro version, just a few months after celebrating his 18th birthday.
Wow, he got to the finish as well, didn't he?
He did get to the finish, yes, albeit outside the time limit, unfortunately, so not given an official result. But yeah, youngsters with very little experience in pro races are quickly at the pointy end of them and probably aren't shouted at, I guess, to get out of the way in a way that they would have been back in the day. Let's say. I'm not saying that they're necessarily causing more crashes, as you just point out, but it might be just another small factor that's contributing to the crashes.
Yeah, and I think you can say fairly safely that you're more willing to take risks when you're young, aren't you?
Mm.
I mean, like, speaking personally, but also wider as well. Like, the older you get, the more risk-averse you become.
Well, I've got even more experience than you, Si, and I would agree with you. I guess another point is clothing and equipment. it's as dialed in now as it's ever been in cycling, isn't it? Literally kilometres per hour faster than it used to be.
Yeah. Ollie and Alex will actually be talking about modern equipment and its impact on safety in the peloton in the tech show later this week. I mean, what have they got to cover? Aerotech, disc brakes, are they too good? In fact, it's a bit ironic, isn't it? Tyres being too quick. But something that we were thinking about, bike setup and the position that riders are adopting is a big factor, potentially. The UCI have imposed their new regulation on inward turn brake levers, but handlebars are still narrower than they've ever been, and more riders seem to be spending more time on the brake hoods as well rather than the drops.
I guess because they know that that position on the hoods is faster. I mean, convention would say that it is safer and more stable to be on the drops, and there's no doubt at all that you're going to have more control if you're using the more traditional wider handlebars of the past.
Yeah. Otherwise, downhill mountain bike racers would all be riding 38 centimetre bars because they're well aero. I mean, they'd go a lot faster in a straight line, wouldn't they?
They definitely would.
They would, but then they also wouldn't be able to go around corners. No chance to be able to keep control of the bike when things get gnarly.
Yeah, I mean, it's also like, when you look at the road riders now, it's as though they're in a time trial position, isn't it? And anyone that's ridden a time trial bike is going to know how much harder it is to control than your traditional road bike.
Absolutely.
Skitterish.
Yeah, well, you only have to watch that video that Ollie filmed with our mate Phil, where we gave him posh bikes to ride, see how much faster it would go. You see him try and get out of the TT bars. Brilliant. Anyway, to sort of sum up where we've got to so far, races are getting faster, riders are getting faster, equipment is getting faster, positions becoming less stable, riders potentially aren't as used to being in a peloton as much. Plus, something we've not talked about yet, there's more road furniture than ever. The question is, are there any solutions?
No one's come up with any good ones, have they? We're probably not going to. I guess you could make bikes deliberately slower somehow. I'm pretty sure Formula One had to do something similar a few years back when things got really dangerous.
Yeah, I can't imagine people being too happy with this suggestion. Bike manufacturers who've ploughed millions into R&D, they're not going to be up for this. The riders won't be, I don't think, would they? Here you are, I have this bike. It's going to make Paris-Roubaix an hour longer again.
It's going
to
make you a lot safer.
I think if you said to riders, it'd be interesting, wouldn't it? If you did a poll and say, like, you're all going to be on bikes that are 10% slower, so it's the same playing field now, but like, and it's going to make you safer. How many
would
do you reckon?
I've got no idea.
I think quite a few
would be up for it.
You reckon?
Well, if everyone's on the same fairly level playing field, or like, so they're exactly 10% slower than they were yesterday, maybe.
But if every race was 10% longer?
No.
Anyway. I don't think us as consumers would be terribly happy if suddenly our bikes got slower as well. We'd all feel rubbish.
Well, ours wouldn't get any slower.
Well, it would. It'd be 10% slower.
No.
We'd be doing like 24K an hour.
But this is why the manufacturers wouldn't be happy. We wouldn't be using the same bikes as the pros. We'd have the faster, lighter
ones. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
So you'd be there with your aero socks and your aero
cruising
helmet.
Cruising past Vanderpool.
But what would you change to the equipment? Because you could just bring back flappy jerseys. That would probably slow them down by 10%.
Hard to regulate there. I guess you could limit rim depth. There's a starting point.
Yeah, but then bikes wouldn't look as cool.
Minimum 10-kilo bikes. Yeah, there's a few things that you could do, but like I said, I don't think the manufacturers are going to be up for it, nor the riders either.
No. Well, go on then. What's the next thing?
Should we just hand it over to the UCI? No, I have got. All right, a serious one. You could reduce the number of riders in the pro peloton, either by reducing the number of teams taking part in each race or reducing team size at each race, or both.
Well, I mean, that wouldn't go down well in some quarters as well, would it? But it's hard to argue with, I think, that a peloton of 100 riders isn't going to be safer than one of 200.
Yeah, I mean, there'd still be a fight for position, wouldn't there? Particularly in a race like Flanders or Roubaix, but it would take a lot of the heat out of it. Even if you were last rider in the peloton, you wouldn't feel like you were that far back in a peloton of what would be about 80 at that point, I guess.
No, it's true that. One thing I often wonder is whether riders, this is probably a bit controversial, and I don't want to victim blame, but whether riders could take a little bit more responsibility for their own safety a little bit.
That's an opinion I've been reading and listening to quite a lot in recent weeks. But I think easier said than done.
Yeah.
I mean, I always remember a quote from our very own Martin Ashton for a GCN Plus documentary that he featured in. He said that anybody doing a risky sport is acutely aware of how risky that sport is. They just don't think that anything bad is going to happen to them personally until it does.
So it's actually more like riders need protecting from themselves?
I'd say so, yeah. I think it's sort of quite fanciful, I guess, to think that riders will simply choose as an entire group to take fewer risks all of a sudden, to break earlier, to look after each other's best interests all the time.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that is true. But it's hard to apportion blame for all these crashes then, when ultimately it does kind of come down to the riders. I always think if you ask a pro to cycle down a dangerous descent, like they could get down the most dangerous road on the planet safely 100 times out of 100. Mm. It's just that in a race, that's where you add the risk. So it's not that the road itself is dangerous, it's that the racing is dangerous. Mm. The riders make it dangerous.
Well, maybe you know the answer to that already, because then you'd get dropped on every descent.
What, if they didn't race down it? Yes, I suppose that's right, isn't it? Another one, though, about riders. What about skills? Mm. I mean, some riders do seem lucky / skilled. They just don't crash as much.
No, very true.
I don't want to jinx him, but Matthew Van Der Poel?
Yeah, he's had a couple of crashes over the years.
He has.
But probably doesn't quite crash as often. That said, what has he done, 5 days of racing so far this year?
Yeah.
But yeah, I can tell you a point. Sagan at his peak as well, very rarely hit the deck, did he?
Yeah. Anyway, that's probably enough from us, isn't it, really? We'd be very interested to hear your thoughts at home on this. Do you feel there have been more crashes this year, or is it just more impactful when it's the sport's biggest names who are going down?
That's an interesting question. Also, let us know what you think can be done to reduce the crashes that we are seeing, whether or not there are more than before. You can do all that in the comment section just down below.
Can I add one more thing?
Go on.
I don't think it's the speed that's causing
crashes.
No, I don't see why. Like I don't see why there's a link between faster speeds and more crashes.
You've got less time to react to something, I would say. You know, be that a rider falling off in front of you. I think everything's more compact as well. But, you know, when there is a narrowing from the side of the road through traffic coming or whatever it might be, or just a sudden curb there, just even 10Ks an hour difference, it makes a difference to your reaction time when you get to that point, if you're behind someone that hits it.
Maybe. I think the intensity of racing is the thing, personally. But maybe the two are inextricably linked.
Yeah, well, once Specialized start producing 12-kilo bikes, we shall find out.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we are going to start with news of Cycling Shorts. I love it when that happens.
He really does.
I really do, yeah.
We saw this story over on road.cc, taken from a LinkedIn post that came from Sam Ratazak, who's the founder of Sport Innovation Design. Along with clothing manufacturer Bioracer, he's invented cycling shorts with a built-in airbag.
I can't stop giggling at that. In the short video clip, you can see the airbag. It kind of looks a little bit like an inner tube in your shorts. Not like that. It basically runs over your hips, around the top of your butt, and then it kind of like follows the line of the bib straps, basically.
Is that an airbag in your shorts? You're just pleased to see me. Comes to mind, doesn't
it? Yeah, no, it's not like that.
No, it doesn't go as far as a giant protective bubble like an avalanche suit, but you could see that it might help to take some of the impact out of a crash. One for the pro peloton, maybe.
Well, I don't know. At face value, I think the trade-off they've made for wearability and lightweight means it doesn't quite look like it's actually got the protection you would want from a protective pair of shorts. But I would love to try a pair, though.
I think what you mean is you'd love to get a pair for Hank to try.
That's exactly what I mean, yeah. Now, moving on, another piece of tech which aims to disrupt the status quo. So a Dutch company called MTRL have gone into production, along with plastics firm Aegis, with what is a bonkers-looking bicycle. I'm
trying to think how to describe this. I think chunky doesn't even come close.
No, it really doesn't, no.
As it's made out of recycled and recyclable plastic and it's designed to be maintenance-free.
Yeah, you've got to say, it's a cool idea, but it does look like something IKEA would design and not in a good way.
Well, we applaud the thinking behind it.
And we do, yeah.
And maybe they're onto the right lines with an easily mass-producible, sustainable bike. The European Union last week signed a declaration on cycling, would
That's
you believe?
That's right, yeah. This is pretty big, actually. So in the words of the president of Cycling Industries Europe, which is not a body that I'd heard about until reading this press release, but nevertheless, the president says there is no reason to wait to grow cycling in Europe. It's a win-win. Mobility, transition, job creation, economic growth, promotion of local companies, all available now, all affordable now.
Affordable at government level for investment, perhaps. But try telling that to the average cycling enthusiast, where, as we all know, things are getting very expensive in the cycling world. Hey, buy a new Aero race bike. It's only £15,000.
Ah, yeah. But at least you only need an aero race bike these days, don't you? You just have to stick 32mm tyres on, another layer of bar tape, and boom, you can win Paris-Roubaix on one, just like Mathieu Van Der Poel.
In 5 hours and 26 minutes.
He didn't even get blisters on his hands, did he?
No, and he didn't have gloves on.
I don't think we can show the photo because we haven't got the rights to it, but basically everyone's hands after Roubaix look like they've been, I don't know, not wearing oven gloves and taking like
yes,
bowls out of the oven, whereas Van Der Poel, like some kind of cycling god, completely unharmed.
He was playing golf less than 24 hours after doing Paris-Roubaix.
Well, there you go.
Right, last bit of new tech now. Legendary Italian groupset manufacturer Campagnolo have just released their first ever power meter. Better late than never, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's a spider-based system with 16 strain gauges in, which they say gives an accuracy of just 1%.
Yeah.
So just 1%. That's very good, obviously.
Yes, an accuracy of plus or minus 1%, which is, as you say, very good. Imagine being 1% accurate. That'd be pretty crap, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah. Anyway, you do have to say,
it's basically like the GCN show.
Basically,
I think we're up to 2.5 these days.
I think so, yeah. It's a premium offering, this Campagnolo power meter.
I did see the price,
yeah,
yes.
The price is $2,449.
You should take a short intake of breath, doesn't it? Or a sharp intake of breath.
Yeah.
Anyway, this seems like a good time to introduce a product that you could get your hands on for free.
What?
Courtesy of our mates over at Topeak.
That's right, competition time, isn't it? Up for grabs, a PacGo X, which is possibly the sturdiest looking bike box you can possibly get for your precious steed.
I remember being at Eurobike a few years ago when they launched that. And as boxes go, I would say it's a thing of beauty. I remember looking at the thing. I really want that bike box. Anyway, the person that wins that is also going to get themselves a tune-up station, which is a bike storage and charger combination stand.
That's right. And three runners-up will also get a tune-up station each.
Now, you will be wanting to know how you enter this particular giveaway, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we will put a link in the description below this video where you will need to fill in your details and answer a simple question about the PacGo bike box.
We should let you know that the entries to this giveaway will close on Friday the 19th of April, I think 10 a.m. BST, with winners announced soon after that on this, the GCN show.
Yeah, you know, Manon got her hands on a PacGo X.
You were telling me, yes.
Yeah, and I was using my old faithful bike bag, and on the way back from Girona, we thought, you know, for Megabants, we'd have a bike packing race. She absolutely kicked my ass.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she did. I was like, she's going to put it in a box. It's going to take forever. Yeah. No, it was actually way quicker than...
It was the box, was it?
Yes, it was. Anyway, good luck, everyone. Get stuck in.
It's now time for the welcome return of Hack /Bodge of the Week. Is the uploader working? Sort of, apparently.
Yeah. Now, we've got to say a huge thank you to you lot for lobbying Killian Kelly, getting him to focus a little bit more on his day job and a little bit less on swanning around. In fact, we've got video evidence of someone literally asking Killian whilst he's
lobbying face to face.
Yeah, whilst he's doing the Flanders Sportif, check it out.
They're not joking, though. It is my fault.
Okay, so I didn't upload anything.
Yeah. Monday. I'll fix it on Monday.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. I don't know who that was, but thank you.
But well done you. And everyone else has written to him publicly on social media to humiliate him for not doing his actual job. But that's still only sort of working. We've got three to give you this week, starting with this one from Stephen in Northern Indiana. Since SPD clipless pedals are double-sided, why not use one side for something useful instead of just leaving it empty? The weight of the lights keeps the pedal oriented for easy clipping in. There's a caveat to this. It says, upload on April the 1st. Please don't actually try this.
Ah, I was thinking that's quite good, actually.
I wasn't.
Were you not?
Well, all right in a straight line, but, I mean, people already clip their pedals going around a corner, don't they, if they pedal too early.
That is true, actually.
A recipe for disaster going around corners with one of those things underneath.
But as I found out in my high-vis interview, highlighting biological motion i.e. pedalling motion, it's the best thing you can do.
Mm.
So there you go. I mean, reflectors on pedals is quite an old school thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe you just have to go back to that, but there you go.
Quite possibly.
I thought that was good. And then I thought that you were going to tell me it's 3D printed and I was going to be an absolute hackle bodge heaven. But anyway, what are we going to say? Bodge, I guess then.
It's an bodge, April Fool. Yeah, it's an April Fool's joke.
All right. Next up, we've got this one from Con. Location Dublin, Ireland. Con says, I'm a graphic designer by profession and I've designed the 2024 Blanche Wheelies club kit and new logo. I also like vintage cycling. So what would our club jersey look like if it was from the late 70s, early 80s? I got three sweatshirts, cut them up and sewed them back together. I included three back pockets and the club name to get that vintage look. And actually, that looks
so cool.
It looks really cool.
Hack.
Yeah,
I'm saying
totally.
Hack straight away.
Absolutely. Weird sweatshirt, though, with such short sleeves on the top. There must be a bit of extra, like...
It's a vintage jersey slash sweatshirt, isn't it?
Yeah, but where do you buy a sweatshirt with sleeves that short?
Well, given that he's sewn three separate sweatshirts together,
I think the sleeves
I'm sure he could cut sleeves and make them look quite good as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hacked.
Yeah,
I think that's
hack from me as well.
100%, that's cool. I think
if we still had the Gson app, that would have been plus 90% hack.
I reckon it would. I reckon you don't even need to get that made into a jersey. I think you've got a business there selling, like...
I don't know if it would be much of a business.
Trickle or sweatshirts.
You're having to get three separate sweatshirts, cut them apart, sew them back together.
And I don't
sell
know.
Them.
Charity shop sweatshirts. Mm. You can have all sorts of trickle or combos.
Never say never.
Sell them in a posh shop to hipsters.
Mm.
I think you're good to go there, Con.
You can buy one of these and you get a free Campagnola power meter. Right, last one comes in from Kim in Wood Rising in Australia. I bought this Damani LT Plus 2 years ago and the Isis Speed promised comfort and compliance but didn't deliver.
Whoa.
It took me a long time to figure out how to fit the redshift suspension post as there's a pivot bolt with bushings and a rebound damper to modify without compromising the carbon build. It's now done and my 75-year-old bones are much happier. And it took us a while to figure out what was going on here because initial inspection suggested somebody had just fitted an aftermarket seat post to a bike.
Yes.
we have now figured it out, we think.
We think we figured it out, yes. So we've been Googling furiously, haven't we?
Yeah.
So the Damani...
LT Plus.
LT Plus, yeah. Looks like it's got kind of a semi-integrated seat mask. So it appears that in this case, the carbon frame has effectively been hacksawed away and an additional seat clamp added, which strikes me as slightly dodgy, probably a little bit... dangerous in terms of your warranty. Mm. Can't imagine Trek are going to have this back if there's a problem.
No.
But if your sit bones are happy, then why not?
I think I'm still going to go hack. Because it's from the way this is worded very carefully, I get the impression that Kim was very careful to keep the structural integrity somehow of this whole bike setup, rather than just literally hacking away at it, putting a seat clamp on and hoping for the best.
Yeah, well, I mean, if the
post... I'm basically saying I'm giving the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah, if the post's long enough, right, then there'll be a bit of extra structural integrity further down the frame. I wouldn't do it, but, if you made your bike more comfortable and you're happy.
Right, hack for me. Bodge. Go on, bodge.
I'm going to have to say bodge. I mean, the fact that it took us a while to work out what was going on is good, but I just wouldn't go there. Right, we've got one more, haven't we? This one came in from...
Didn't need the uploader for this one, did we?
No, we did. This is from Chloe, who works here at GCN. You'll remember her from the Big Sugar gravel race that she smashed back in October. And this is from the start line of a local race. Someone's boa had given out in the car park, and so it was fixed with a zip tie.
Hack.
I mean, yeah, like that is when a zip tie is useful. I'd probably have put the zip tie on the other way round so it didn't catch on my crank.
Or you could have just ridden it without the boa. I mean, world championships in recent times have been won by somebody who's got a broken boa dial.
Indeed they have, yeah. Matthew Vanderpool crashes all the time.
Yes.
Even when there's no one around, he just fell off on a corner.
The equipment or the peloton size or something. Yeah, not sure what's going on there.
Well, he definitely does go fast. So we should, Anyway, there you go. No, I think that's a hack.
I think that's a hack as well. Right, upload.globalcyclingnetwork.com might be the place to send us your hacks and bodges. We'll just keep our fingers crossed and keep on publicly humiliating Hillian.
Indeed. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted, I can't stop grinning, GCN Camelback water bottle. Dan, an update on the GC Immortals. They are in the UK.
They're in the UK?
They are in the UK. They are in the warehouse, whatever the warehouse is. But no one thought to send us one.
Oh.
So next week, we will have one.
Yeah. Is Killian in charge of it?
Anyway, I'm delighted that they're in the house, so to speak.
Well, that's good news, isn't it?
It is really good news, isn't it?
Big house we've got, all of the UK.
Yeah, I don't know what else is in the warehouse.
Yeah, that's just gone missing over the years.
Yeah, imagine that. There we go.
Right, last week's photo was this one. I don't remember which race it was from, actually, but one of classics by the looks of things, with a town crier of sorts in the foreground here. We have a winner, and that winner is at Me Cool Leroyd, who put, "No, mate, you can't just give the whole field a super nice."
Should we explain that?
Better, yeah.
Just in case you don't watch the tech show, if you don't, I don't know what you've been doing with your Thursdays, go and check it out over on the GCN Tech channel. But the bike vault section, any bike that gets a super nice, the guys ring a bell. Really loudly, don't they?
Yeah.
So there we go.
And always hear it down the hallway.
Yeah, it looks just like that. So yeah, like that one, Me Cooleroid. Very good indeed. Should we go for this week's image for you all to get stuck into?
Or let's just let Mr. Cooleroid, I don't remember the name now, the winner, get in touch with us on Facebook with your address. We'll get a bottle sent out to you, which is now in the UK.
Woohoo!
This week's photo, should I say, is from the end of Paris-Roubaix in the Velodrome, and this is Jentha Biermans, who writes for Arkea B&B Hotels. I will get you started.
Go on.
Jentha Biermans has just given birth to his first bike, who he has named Bianchi. Weighing at 7.2 kilos, both father and bike are doing well under the circumstances.
That is one of your best, mate.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Genuinely, that is absolutely brilliant. If you can't see the image, by the way, then, I mean, he literally is in a position that looks like he's given birth to, admittedly, a very dirty bike, but then I suppose that is like childbirth, isn't it, really?
He's just got a saddle in between his two feet, hasn't he? The rest of the bike is there.
Ah, there you go. Soigneur's got some tats going on, hasn't he?
Sleeves, yeah.
What even is that? It's like a...
It's a tattoo.
No, I know, but a tattoo of what?
I don't know.
It's like, it looks like a fox in a suit.
Well, maybe. I mean...
Or is it has it got horns? I don't know.
Everyone listening to this on a podcast is going to go straight home and try and look at this caption.
Well,
photo,
yeah. I mean, that is some serious tattage going on. So,
and a bloke giving birth to a bike. What more do you need to know? Right, get stuck into the comments section down below. I'll pick a winner next week. You're shortly going to know what's coming up on GCN this week. But first up, some comments from last week, starting underneath last week's show. JJJ599 wrote in to say, "You know you've been cycling 2 months when after 6 months of Finnish winter, you still have visible tan lines above your knees."
That is impressive work, isn't it? I mean, by about mid-October, I'm back to being as pasty as it's possible.
Oh, really, are you?
Yeah.
It took me a few years post-pro cycling to get rid of tan lines completely.
Really?
I mean, I didn't try and make an effort to get rid of them, but yeah, they have now faded, so I'm just pasty white all over.
Lovely thought. Jimmy Hibbs said, "You know, you've been cycling too much when you drive your car like you ride a bike, nodding at cyclists and using hand signals to turn." I included this because for many years, to go faster in my car, I used to lean forward to get more aero. It wasn't until my wife picked up on it that I stopped.
Really?
Yeah, literally. I'd be like, right, I need to accelerate.
So, whenever I go over a pothole, I sort of feel like there should be a way of signalling pothole to the cars behind. I guess the hazard warning lights would suffice.
Yeah.
Disgruntled Toons put, "The number one sign of overtraining is depression. It is actually most common in swimmers."
I couldn't work out whether this was a joke or whether it was true.
Might well be true. I mean, I'm just sort of hazarding a guess here, but I think a swimmer's career is quite short because the training is just as intense, but all you're doing is staring at a line at the bottom of the pool for hours every day.
Well, that's what I thought. Like, maybe, you know, like swimming 5 hours a day would be quite depressing.
Could be, yeah.
But actually, it is a very good sign of overtraining if you're feeling a bit sad.
If you're grumpy particularly, or really feeling under it in a mental health point of view, maybe you're overdoing it on the bike.
I was listening to, can I just sidetrack? I know the GCN show's going on and on a bit this week, but I was listening to a really interesting podcast and it was talking about efficiency of performance And the difference between a triathlete, a top triathlete and a top cyclist, the difference in efficiency is not much, basically, because on a bike, you're in a fixed position. But the difference between a top swimmer and a top triathlete is massive. Like,
really?
Yeah, literally, like, huge amounts of magnitude different, because swimming, you're completely unsupported. Mm. And so basically, your technique is so important, which is why they do so many hours from such a young age.
Crikey.
There you go. That was my podcast I was listening to.
Underneath, look after your cycling kit with these quick washing tips. Filthy Rich 556, but I have my process dialed. Really no need to watch this video, but I figured I'd click to see if I was overlooking anything. I was overlooking everything. I admit when I'm wrong. Thumbs up.
There you go. Also, can I just say a quick correction from last week's GTN show? I said that Filippo Ganna was the first rider to go sub 4 minutes in the individual pursuit. Mm. Aston Lambie.
Oh, yes.
Of course. Altitude, a lot of people, yeah. Yeah, that's why. It was because he was at altitude. Count. That's why I discount it. No. So, yeah, hats off. Apologies, Aston. Because, yeah, that was some ride, wasn't it?
Oh, he's a beast of a bike rider, isn't he?
He
Aston Lambie. Underneath, I tried to finish the Tour of Flanders with just 8 weeks of training. DASF 89. But, oh, yes, the classic progression from I will be giving it the beans to maybe some beans to, well, a single bean will have to do. Within a sportif. Well done. That was Killian Kelly, of course.
Yeah. Follix Mute said the hot rod flame socks must have added a couple of extra watts. They were quite snazzy, Scott said. And a lot of you are commenting that perhaps Killian could give Connor a few lessons on how to actually finish a cycling event, which I thought was very funny, but yes. Connor didn't enjoy it quite so much.
He was disgruntled, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, yeah, a little bit. Well, I mean,
make sure you don't carry on putting comments like that about Connor finishing things.
That's right, yeah. When something strikes a nerve.
Right, coming up on the channel this week, on Wednesday, how to ride steep climbs. Not with Killian Kelly, I don't believe.
No.
He'll be back once he's done the uploader and got the bottles to the office, won't he? On Thursday, aero sucks, but this might help.
Yeah, some tips from Manon on the fact that everyday aero is a bit annoying, but actually I don't know what her tips are, so I'm going to have to watch that. On Friday, we've got a protein bus tour, the first of the season. That's the Lotto Destiny bus, so I'm quite looking forward to seeing that one. And then on Saturday, Dan's journey back to health and fitness. What is this, Dan?
Well, this is the start of a series of videos where I'm going to have a starting point, which is right here, right now, of where I'm at in life from a health and fitness point of view. So as you know, I haven't ridden my bike loads over the last 13 years since retirement. I've been a bit sporadic with other exercise. I have drunk quite a lot of beer in that time. And a few other bits that you'll learn in that video as well. I've got to a point where I'd like to change, not become a monk, not start dedicating 20 hours a week to be on the bike again, but make some changes that all of us can do to try and lengthen my lifespan.
Oh, wow.
Which is something I've been really interested in on podcasts and reading books, etc., for the last 6 months. And 6 months later, I've decided I might do something about it.
There we go. Oh, that's going to be cool. I can't wait to watch that one then.
Thank you very much.
Do you know how long your life's going to be yet? Wasn't it about your grip strength?
Well, there's a few markers, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's grip strength, there's VO2 max. I've done all these tests. I'm not going to reveal the results just yet. There's leg strength, there's muscle mass. You might be able to guess roughly where I'm at on muscle mass. And a couple of other markers as well. It's really interesting when you start reading into it. But yeah, watch that this coming Saturday.
There we go.
And on Sunday, does calorie counting work?
Yeah, so this is a bit of a follow-up from Ollie's amazing video about weight loss, basically. One of the most contentious things within that was about calorie counting. So he's dived into the science of calorie counting. Does it work?
I'm looking forward to that. Ollie's blooming good, isn't he, with the details and that.
Oh, amazing.
And the nuance as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because so, he does listen to a hell of a lot of information and read a hell of a lot of information on all things performance-based and nutritional-based.
So there you go, yeah.
He's got a good perception of it.
He does indeed. All right. If you've got this far in the GTN show, then congratulations. Your medal is on its way to
you. Well done, Neil.
there we go. Right. That's it from us. See you next week.
See you next week.